Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast. This is a show about data networking. If you are a network engineer, an architect, you design things, you build things, this is the show for you. IP and Ethernet and security and wireless and data center design, all of those things are what the Packet Pushers Podcast is about. Today we have a sponsored show with the good folks at CPacket. CPacket Networks, and what do they do is what we are about to find out. We have two gentlemen from CPacket joining us, Jim Berkman, Senior Director for Marketing, and Kerry Takanaka, who is a Vice President for Product Management. Guys, let's get right into this. Jim, if you would you please introduce us to the company? Who is CPacket? What do you guys do?
Absolutely. Thanks, Ethan and Greg. Great to be here. CPacket is a next-generation performance monitoring solution. We are a purpose-built solution that is designed to deliver better performance, deeper levels of insight, and broader visibility, as well as increase operational efficiency to your network. And so this is compared to traditional NPM and APM performance solutions. CPacket has powerful distributed intelligence. We are based around an ASIC processor, which is a little old school for the cloud era that we live in, but it really gives additional horsepower to be able to determine root cause problems, to be able to troubleshoot the network in a way that really nobody else is able to, and at speeds that no one else is able to. And today, as we're right on the cusp of that 40 gig and 100 gig transformation in the network, this really is becoming important.
Okay, let's drill into this here, because you said a lot of things. You had the marketing words perfect. The hair was just well coiffed, and I felt all the buzzwords surging through my body, filling me with energy. And I still don't know if I exactly got what you do. So let me see if I get this here. You said performance network monitoring, and you were talking about applications. Specifically, you mentioned NPM and APM performance monitoring. So if I'm a CPacket user, what I'm able to use this box for is network monitoring of all of my apps, making sure that what I'm delivering across the network is happening in a timely fashion and so on. And another thing you said there was ASIC. So this is a box that's got a special chip in it that is doing, you know, magical analysis for me, I'm going to assume. And then you also said speed. You said you can do this faster than anybody else. So this box with an ASIC in it is doing analysis at, you said, up to 40 and 100 gig speeds. Did I get all those things right?
Yes, you did. Absolutely.
Okay. So if it's a box, a lot of this kind of stuff, we've had a lot of these sort of solutions over the years, Jim, right? I could name a whole bunch of people that are in this space. I won't, but a lot of times what those things are is a piece of software sitting on an x86 server. You feed it a SPAN port and it does analysis and tells you things. But this is not that. This is actually somewhat different from that, yeah?
Sure. And the solution that you just described, it will tell you things. Unfortunately, it may not tell you the things that you need to know. And it may not tell you the things you need to know in the time frame that you can find that actionable. We are a purpose-built hardware solution. As we said, we do have our own custom ASIC processor that's really designed to do deep packet inspection. I emphasize the word packet in that deep packet inspection. We're, as CPacket, the company name signifies, we're really looking at every packet that's running across the network. And we are able to do that at network speeds of 40 gig and then we've done 100 gig for some custom applications, and we're able to do it at a throughput and a resolution that is significantly higher than those x86 white box solutions that you mentioned. So software is great. We have software running on our box. We have the most tremendous software. Sorry, I've been watching too many debates lately. We have software as well, but our software is running on a purpose-built solution. And that's necessary because today it's much easier to generate traffic on the network than it is to be able to monitor at a very granular level that traffic.
One more thing about the speed then. We've been talking about 40 and 100 gig speeds. Is that aggregate per box or is that like per port on your box?
That is per port on our boxes. So our largest box right now has 32 40 gig ports, and we are able to do line rate inspection at 40 gig across all 32 ports, and we can do that down to single millisecond resolution, which that's about 1,000 times higher resolution than our competitors.
Okay, so this is a big, serious box that can do an enormous amount of, well, you said deep packet inspection, so we're not talking about just, you know, classifying lower end NetFlow kind of stuff that's up to layer 4. We're talking about, you know, all the way into layer 7 for what sorts of apps here?
Yeah, you mentioned that it was a, you know, big, serious, fast box. I think one of the things that's actually unique about our solution, owing to the fact that it's driven by our custom ASIC, is that it's serious and it's fast, but it's actually not that big. So by designing a custom ASIC that is purpose-built for this function, we're able to deliver this kind of performance in a very small form factor. So when Jim mentioned our product that supports 32 times 40 gig ports, which is 1.28 terabits, we're doing that in a 2U form factor. We're delivering a lot of this performance in a very small form factor, which allows us to connect to the network in as many points as possible in order to get visibility across the network for both monitoring and troubleshooting applications. That's sort of like the basis for our differentiation and also that stem from, you know, both that deployment model and that capability.
To U, I'm getting 32 by 40 gig ports. I would be feeding traffic from all over my network and pushing it into this box then. So it's kind of like I would just take spans from all over the network and send them in. Would I position the box in line? How do customers typically deploy it?
That's a good question. So you mentioned earlier on that you've seen a lot of technologies and they're based on, you know, connecting a box up to a span port and receiving traffic and doing a level of processing and things like that. That's great for the particular application that's receiving that traffic from that span because, as Jim mentioned, software is really good for performing some complex operations, but it actually can't maintain performance at network speeds. In our case, because we can guarantee the performance that our monitoring solution can provide, we tend to connect directly to the wire. So the way that we're typically connected to the network is through passive optical taps. What we want to be in is the position to get every single packet off the wire and analyze it, and mm-hmm. not just a best effort of some packets.
Can we have a quick deviation here? Now, there's a trend in the market at the moment to actually do packet capture in the ASIC itself. So we've seen different vendors with custom silicon come out and say, we can now start doing packet capture in the ASIC. So whether it's a, you know, merchant silicon from, say, like the Broadcom Tomahawk, or whether it's other vendors who build custom silicon, and they're saying that's the best way to do it. Have you got any opinions on that or any perspectives? Is that really true? Because I've always thought that capturing in the ASIC is actually limited. You're restricted by a whole bunch of things, and it's not actually guaranteed.
The capture is good. First of all, we're going to say that too, because there are cases where you need to be able to look at, you know, a stream of packets and be able to analyze things that you couldn't take into account at the application level. It's new phenomena. You need to actually see the packets. But as you also mentioned, it's a very limited resource because let's say that we look at a 10 gigabit link. So 10 gigabits per second translates to 1.25 gigabytes per second. That's a lot of data. Or if we take it even down three orders of magnitude to the kind of resolution that we can do our monitoring at, which is per millisecond, it's 1.25 megabytes per millisecond. If we look at the kinds of buffer sizes that are available in standard silicon, whether it's switch silicon or NICs or anything like that, it's actually on the order of megabytes. So what we're really talking about is maybe at best, let's say a millisecond's worth of data. So packet capture is useful. Yes, we employ packet capture in the cases where we want to drill into it some more. But at the same time, operating on the fly and not becoming reliant on packet capture as a backup because you can't actually maintain wire speed monitoring performance, that is a little less good.
Because the thing is that when you do packet captures, you have to have 100% integrity of data source. You can't think to yourself, oh, I've only got 99% of packets. Because at that point, you might be missing the packet that actually is the thing that you're hunting for. And this is where my experience of span ports has been hopeless. Because I've never actually got the confidence that the span ports has actually managed to capture the data that I want. Because unless I can get extremely restricted, you know, this source to this destination IP, and then I know that the ASIC's not dropping packets. But I've even seen in perfectly ordinary switches that even when I'm spanning for a very limited traffic source, you can actually see from the sequence numbers that you're missing packets. And that to me is a really key discussion here is that, sure, you can do packet capture in ASICs, but really you're much better building tap networks, I think, and actually getting to the wire. And then the second thing that I think is important is the cost of building taps is much, much cheaper than you think, although a lot of people don't look at it. So would you agree with that point?
I absolutely agree with that, because all of our customers, as they build out their networks, generally speaking, they build in taps as part of their build out. And I agree also with your point about how it's crucial to get every single packet. And obviously, this is not guaranteed on a span port. But a third part, which is actually goes back to the topology of our deployment, is that rather than taking that traffic and doing a extremely limited amount of processing, I would almost call it just filtering and redirection, the key is to push more intelligence closer to that wire. So when you're plucking those packets off the wire at full fidelity, you want to do some processing, you want to push that intelligence, you want to know things about the traffic right there before you start to backhaul it. Because when you start to do that, now you're dependent on another network, which is your monitoring network, in order to get that traffic back someplace else. So what if now you drop packets in that network?
And so all of a sudden, my thing is, every time I'm looking at a packet capture, you're going, have I got all the data? Was my backbone network that, or the management network or the out-of-band network that's capturing the packets back? Or did I have a sudden traffic spike that's overloaded the packet capture engine inside of the switch? You know, how do you reserve the bandwidth? If all of a sudden you're capturing, I don't know, 10, 25 gig ports, you're pulling off 250 gigs of data. Well, 250 gigs of data is... Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's not an unrealistic flow rate these days, because servers, you know, on a 48-port switch, if you've got 250 gigs of data coming off, that's actually quite realistic. That's only 2 to 4 gigabits per second per port across a 48-port switch. That's not unrealistic.
Absolutely. And think about it. Your monitoring network, so your production network, has mechanisms if you lose a packet and you need that packet again, right? It's called TCP. Your monitoring network, because it's only dealing with a copy of that packet, has no such mechanisms, mm-hmm. right? If you lose a packet in your monitoring network, it's gone.
It's gone. So, now, the important thing here is that once you wire up your C packets to those network taps, you're saying that you've got the custom chips, your custom ASICs, which are purpose-built to perform this inspection and capture, can do all this at wire speed. Now, is that a guarantee?
That's a guarantee. I mean, it owes to the algorithms that we've implemented within our chip. It's specially built for this purpose. It won't run Office. It won't run Windows, but it's really, really good at, or Linux or OS X or whatever. But it's really, really good at looking at network traffic, because that's what we made it for.
And Greg, you were talking a lot about packet capture. Typically, though, packet capture in the NPM space isn't necessarily done on the chip. Usually, instead, you have a giant disk array, far larger than our 2-year appliance. And the challenge is that packet brokers, as well as packet capture, have really been used as a crutch by the industry. You know, somewhere around, 8 years ago, maybe, you started seeing this transition from 1 to 10 gig networks. And at that point, the network monitoring industry really went through a bit of a crisis, because you no longer could either do it technically, no longer could the tools keep up with 10 gig network speeds. And, you know, you were just rattling off some of the throughput ratios, but also some of them just couldn't do it at all. I know there was a security solution that former company of mine used to do a ton of business for. We were a packet broker, because they were not able to do more than 1 gig of traffic. And so packet capture really became a crutch that the performance monitoring industry relied on, because they could not do analysis at full line rate anymore. And so what ends up happening oftentimes in these solutions is they buffer everything to disk. They write everything to disk. And at 10 gig, that starts getting cumbersome.
I'm thinking of mainframes that had to run the jobs, and then the job would fail. Then you'd rerun the job. And then so like a couple of days later, you finally get the report that you needed in real time.
Right. Except if you're on, let's say, a WebEx, you can't just rerun that report. That's real-time data now. And so CPAC is doing something different. We do, as Kerry mentioned, have packet capture. However, we're doing the monitoring and the full packet inspection across layers 2 through 7. We're doing that in real time, and we're doing that across all the ports. We have packet capture because some information you really do need to look at, not just real-time, but you need historical reference points. And so we allow you to record, use packet capture for really what it was intended to do, which was provide that historical record. So we're doing the analysis in real time. And so the packet capture doesn't need to be relied on just for that. You can use packet capture for whatever makes operational sense, whether that's maybe you're just storing the packet headers, maybe you're storing the alerts where you know that there is a problem. But you know, maybe in a compliance situation, you're going to record everything. With CPAC, you really only need to do what is operationally intelligent.
So let's talk about that scenario then for compliance. How in the CPAC world would I store all of that data?
Our solution is really made up of three components. We have our analysis nodes, CVUs. That was the 3240 box that we mentioned. We have our forensic recording solution, CStore, and that comes in various sizes. We size that to your network. And then we have our dashboard layer. And those three, more and more, work really in conjunction with each other. So, you know, it used to be that a customer would log into one, then log into another to do different things. That's really changed now, where a customer is able to rely on the solution to provide them the data that they need with, you know, the view that they need without having to log into different elements. It really works as one unified solution.
So if I've got several different CPacket boxes on my network and I've got some data is going to CStore, et cetera, would I be looking at that dashboard view to get a consolidated view of what's happening?
Yeah. So the key in order to be able to make these kinds of observations and even just to look at the network and draw useful inferences from point to point is time synchronization. So all of our devices, when they're deployed throughout the customer's network, they're all time synchronized. So let's say that I'm looking at some slow backups from a server or a client in one location to a server in a different location. And that could give rise to, or that could be the result of, different kinds of network behavior elements, some of those at the source and some of those at the destination. If those two locations are geographically disparate, then they might be connected to different CView devices. The traffic is going into them. We're doing the analysis and things like that. And as the engineer is looking at the network behavior to try to troubleshoot this problem, they can, you know, safely bring up waveforms or time domain analysis of the behavior at point A and point B, overlay them onto one image, and see that maybe this result or maybe this cause is leading to this effect. And they can be assured that those timelines, those waveforms, actually line up and have some meaning. You know, if there wasn't time synchronization, you know, it could be that somebody kicked a box in some data center on Tuesday and that resulted in this, but I'm looking at this on Wednesday and it wouldn't make sense, right? I mean, I would be chasing down a problem that doesn't actually exist. So time synchronization and the ability to compare and contrast across time while knowing that the time basis is solid is very important.
I want to drill into this real-time capability here. So the thing I really want to know, we've talked about how some solutions, oftentimes you're going back in time, trying to figure out what happened an hour ago, what happened yesterday or in the middle of the night, and we want to figure out what went boom so that we can give someone a root cause for a failure. But you've been mentioning, well, we can keep up in real time and kind of tell you what's going on. Can you give us some examples of that?
Sure. So you're very right. There are cases where non-real time or historical context is important in order to get the full picture, right? Maybe I want to compare a previous day to the current day or a previous week to the current week, or maybe I have a slow security vulnerability or something like that, and it's gradually trickling through, and so I need to look back historically in order to get that context or that understanding. At the same time, if there are behavioral elements that I want to know about, maybe it's traffic of a certain type that goes above a certain threshold, or maybe the number of 404 errors, you know, owing to our deep packet inspection, is going above a certain rate. You know, anytime a client can't connect to a server over today's RESTful APIs, a 404 error is generated. So let's say if the number of 404 errors goes above a threshold, and our users can set these thresholds, then they can get an alert. You know, they can receive that alert directly, or we can project it onto these real-time maps. And getting that information quickly, once you decide that maybe that's a precursor of a problem, is the key to reducing your mean time to resolution.
I, as the end user, the consumer of the CPacket product, do I have to do a lot of programming or, you know, setting up these are the thresholds, these are the apps that I'm looking for, these are the conditions that I'm interested in? Or are there canned things that CPacket is looking for, or both?
It's a little bit of both. I'll be honest that today, most of our threshold and alerting mechanisms do depend on you as an end user being relatively sophisticated, but we're collecting all this data across the network. And the exciting thing is that we'll be taking, you know, whole branches of algorithms, whether it's, you know, signal processing or information theory and things like that, and we could apply it to this data that we're gathering such that the alerting can become smarter over time. So I'm not saying we have that today, but that's a really exciting frontier that we're looking into. And you can only do that when you're collecting all this data at this high uniform resolution.
And also just to chime in that really that's something that our partners fill in the gap on. If the customer either doesn't have the domain experience to dial in the settings for what they need to be predictive in the analysis, then the partner can step in, the reseller that's selling the gear to them can step in and help do that configuration work.
Okay, you just said a key word there, Jim, I think, predictive. In other words, because of the real-time monitoring at a very high resolution, predictive implies as you're looking at that traffic, you see a certain condition. Hey, guys, you're about to have a failure. We're pretty sure because of these matches that we've got on the traffic patterns.
Exactly.
A really straightforward example of this that we run into all the time with our customers is look for capacity analysis. So basically what they're doing is that they're looking at various network links. They're looking at it at, you know, relatively low resolution. Maybe it's some kind of sampled average. It's maybe a 1 minute average, or, you know, it could be less. It could be maybe 15 seconds. And what you can see with our product immediately is that there's a huge difference between even 1 second resolution and 1 millisecond resolution. So let's say I'm looking at yesterday. So on Tuesday, I'm looking at my network behavior, and I see that periodically on some links, we're touching at millisecond resolution, we're touching the very top of the capacity for that link. Well, you know, that's obviously bad because as we touch that, then that can lead to things like packet drops, and packet drops lead to very inconsistent behavior, right? I mean, it manifests itself in terms of slow response time. It manifests itself in terms of, you know, poor voice quality or video quality and communications. There's a whole slew of different things that can result in. So we know that that's bad, and we know that it happened yesterday, but, you know, maybe there are things that we can do to troubleshoot this problem a lot more quickly if we get that information in real time today. So we can simply set these thresholds. We can maybe work through some other tools or other mechanisms as well. But now we can act. It's kind of like a detective scene, right? The closer you are to the evidence or from a timeline perspective, the easier it is to resolve these issues.
I think there's something else there too, because you talked about redirection earlier, and I had wanted to follow up on that. Okay, so we've got an ASIC in this box. It does some amount of layer 7 inspection. Some of what you've talked about, I can deduce that HTTP is a part of what you can tear down at L7. But it's an ASIC. It doesn't do everything. And maybe I'm going to guess there's some limitations to just how deep you can go, as particularly when we get into different protocols. So redirection. Could I, as traffic comes in and meet some condition, would the C packet box then redirect it to some other tool that I might have if I want to do, you know, analysis on that traffic?
Absolutely. And as Jim mentioned, we can do that intelligently, right? So we can forward that traffic or that flow based on certain criteria. We can set trigger points so that maybe only when the event of interest that we're looking for is in, not at the start of the event, but maybe in the middle of an event, or that event occurs in the middle of a stream of packets, then we could send the precursor elements, the packets that lead that trigger and the packets that follow that trigger to some other tool for additional analysis.
An example for that might be security, because oftentimes you're dealing with perimeter security that is looking for events, but you need to know more than just, hey, there was an attack. You probably want to know more details about that attack. And so with cPacket, working in conjunction with your perimeter security, when they see something, we can flag that. And because we do have some amount of buffer in addition to our full packet capture solution, we can then send that traffic of interest for deeper inspection.
I think you just said something else really key there too, which is we can talk to that other solution, which makes it sound like there's a way to communicate between the cPacket platform and other platforms?
Absolutely. RESTful API. Our solution is a very open architecture as it relates to working with other solutions.
Ah, okay. So with that then, do you have like a partner ecosystem? You mentioned partners before, but is there like an ecosystem there where folks are writing apps that work in conjunction with cPacket?
So we do have a partner ecosystem, absolutely. I wouldn't necessarily say apps. I think it's so far it's been more on the custom development level as needed, but that's certainly something we're interested in.
Okay. As in, you've got a customer who's got a very specific problem they want solved. You've got the RESTful API there. Now you can do custom integration and say, you know, for this app or for this condition, things that are unique to our business or our organization, we're trying to trigger these events or watch for these things. And when this happens, hand that off to this tool and for additional processing. That's the kind of stuff we're talking about at this point.
Absolutely. Definitely more of a DevOps situation than an app store situation right now.
I got it. Okay. And that makes sense. And I guess that kind of leads into the kind of customers that are looking at the CPACKET solution. You've had a bunch of traction with service providers, yeah?
Absolutely. Service providers, financial institutions, trading exchanges, really anyone whose network, if it goes down, is going to be very costly to them.
Is it more than just the network going down? What about people who just want to know what's going on the network? Like a lot of the time, especially when you're a service provider, you just don't know what's going over your network. You don't know what type of traffic there is. And you need to, people imagine that quality of service configuration actually makes a difference. People want to know what customers are doing in the network. Are your solutions used for that type of stuff?
Absolutely. Service providers are a great example. They have a huge challenge today because churn rates are going up. I think there was a J.D. Powers and Associates study that said, I think it was over 9 or 10% of problems on interactions with your phone. Then the customer base instantly goes from 40% who are ready to jump to 60% are ready to jump. So that's a huge concern. That would be the thing that keeps me up at night. But on the other hand, the other side of the coin, that they have a huge problem because they're having to build out 5G and whatever's next. They're looking at their network infrastructure and they're spending a ton of money. And monitoring is not insignificant to them in terms of costs. And so anywhere a service provider can save money, they need to. And so that monitoring, I think, is one of the sweet spots. But they need to ensure that quality of service is high enough that they're not losing customers. But they also need to ensure that they're not just spending all of their profit. The annual revenue per user, ARPU, is in that industry is going down. And that's, no financial guy wants to see that.
Another thing that's really interesting with respect to service provider use cases and our technology is the kinds of things that happen in the service provider environment or the things that they're trying to troubleshoot or monitor. So from the monitoring perspective, it's all about connectivity to peers, connectivity to content sources and things like that. And that's where, having the millisecond resolution really, really helps because they need to have a good idea as to when they need to upgrade their connections to the outside world. The other element that's actually really, really important is that when there are issues in the service provider network, oftentimes they're a particular subscriber user complains that something is not good. So basically now you're a service provider and you have all of these different users and they're kind of like operating across this giant pipe, but each user is just a single strand in this really big pipe. And how do you isolate the behavior of just that one user from the big pipe? Well, this is where, once again, because of our wire speed packet inspection, we can isolate the behavior of a specific user. We can pull that traffic out. We can look at the behavior. We can send it to other tools. We can do all these different things that specifically helps addressing the kinds of problems that you have when you're a service provider trying to isolate what's going on with a specific user, because the behavior that a specific user sees might be unique to that user and might not be common to the rest of the users.
Now, you guys mentioned we were talking about being able to do custom work, custom integration with other solutions. What about in the box, though? We've got the ASIC that does layer 7 inspections, but that's an ASIC. Once you've spun that, it does what it does. You can't really modify that. I mean, is there any sort of a flexible chip in there, an FPGA or something, where if I was a customer with a special need and I said, hey, CPACKET, can you build this sort of a decode for me so I can do it all on the box? Is that possible?
The ASIC does provide a level of programmability because, obviously if you can tell it to look for different things, then it can do that, right? Right now, most of that flexibility and programmability is something that we expose only internally to our development efforts and things like that. We've toyed with the idea of exposing it more broadly. I think it's not something that we're quite ready to do yet, but what we hear repeatedly from our customers. So I guess there's two parts to this question. So one is our system as a platform, right? Like how can it be utilized to run software maybe or run other applications that are not our applications? And second is how can our customers or how can other end users deal with the fact that they have so many different kinds of products and tools out there and they need to somehow consolidate this information or at least have a unified way of, you know, either extracting data or provisioning searches or different things like that. So the latter is a trend that, you know, all of our customers have asked for. And, you know, as Jim referred to, some of our customers that are integrating, you know, us into their flow, even though we have the user interface, even though we can, you know, provision and we can do things and we have the CLI, they would rather extract that information over these RESTful APIs or provision things over these RESTful APIs because it allows them to kind of flatten their monitoring dashboard, right? So it kind of doesn't matter how good your dashboard is. They need it unified because otherwise it's another tool that somebody needs to be trained on. So having that flexibility is really, really important. In terms of running on our platform, it's a really interesting idea. I think that, you know, in particular, because we separate the data plane and the control plane, right? Because even if you're a server with a NIC and you say, well, I have a management interface and I have another NIC that is actually, you know, taking traffic from the network, it's not really separating the control and data planes because it's kind of a symbolic separation, if you will, because everything runs into the OS and then you start to do your operations and whatnot. Whereas in our case, you know, really we have a data plane and a control plane that are distinct. So, you know, I'm not saying no, you know, maybe in the future there will be the ability to basically stick nodes within our devices and be able to, you know, do searches or provision things or whatever subject to our API. And let me tell you, we've got a lot of headroom in our devices to do a lot of operations like that because all the heavy lifting is being done in silicon rather than in software.
Well, kind of related to that then would be something maybe you can deal with today, SDN controllers. So especially in the service provider space, these guys are running Onos, these guys are running ODL, other controllers. Can you feed into an SDN controller in some way and maybe, you know, with the analytics data, help that SDN controller or the app that's running on it make some sort of a decision?
We don't have that integration today, but that's definitely on our roadmap. That's exactly what we want to do. We want to facilitate getting much better information to those controllers. We want to be able to understand what's going on differently in the network so we can keep up with changes that those controllers are making so that we don't tell you that something is wrong when it's just been reconfigured, right? So it's kind of a two-way street, but I think we can really, really facilitate making better decisions. And I don't want to sound too grand to say that we can, you know, enable the next level of SDN, but I think, you know, like if you look at the OpenFlow specification, there's a lot of network information or information about the network that could be sent to SDN controllers. But the reality is that most of the infrastructure can basically send, you know, packets and octets. It's not set up to send the detailed information that an SDN controller could take advantage of, short of actually forwarding it actual packets. And now if you're sending all these actual packets over that control plane, does that really make sense? I don't think it does. So, you know, in our case, because we can monitor, we can compress, we can send analytics, we can send alerts, that's a much better way that to handle the amount of information without sacrificing the expressiveness or the quality of the information that's coming from the network.
But essentially what Carrie is also saying is that you have the data and control planes, but there's really something missing, and that is a monitoring plane within SDN. And I think CPacket could definitely, as we go along, could definitely play in that.
Well, as you said, there's a lot of headroom in the platform, and it's got the basic requirement met, that of being able to handle all of the data and then make decisions based on having all of the data.
One of the questions that strikes me as somebody who's a practitioner is the problem of packet sequencing. Like when we get the packets off the interface, are they actually kept in perfect order? And am I able to debug like a flow? Like if I put a CPacket engine in front of a firewall, can I actually see the flow of the packets hitting the firewall and then debug if there's something not right with the firewall or with the server itself?
So let me take that question and put it in the context of a really specific, valuable information commodity scenario. That scenario is market data feeds. In the world of finance, market data feeds is a stream of information. It's emitted from the exchanges. They're called venues in finance talk, to various financial service providers. So some of those financial service providers might take those data feeds and repackage them and send them to other brokerages or other customers. Or in some cases, those financial service providers are actually the consumers of the data themselves. So they're high-frequency trading or algorithmic trading platforms. So they basically feast on a diet of these market data feeds. And market data feeds, they're not flows in the TCP concept. They're a sequence of UDP messages. So you can have multiple messages packed into each UDP packet. But what's unique about them, of course, is that there's an identifying sequence number in every single message. So not just every single packet, but every single message within that packet. So what's the issue here? When these algorithmic trading platforms or when these other consumers of this market feed data are trying to make good decisions about what trades to make, they need to know that their data is complete. And the only way to make sure that their data is complete is that to detect the presence of any, you know, gaps in their monotonically increasing sequence numbers. So our feature, basically what it does, and once again, we're doing it in hardware, provides wire speed analysis and detection of these gaps or reorders and alerting. And then actually, going back to some of our discussion about packet captures and cases where those things are really good, gives you a snapshot of the packets surrounding that event so that somebody who's a subscriber to this data who detects a gap can maybe say, hey, you, Mr. Financial Service Provider, you have not provided me with the data, and here's the evidence that shows where the gap occurred. Or possibly it's something that needs to be troubleshooted in the fundamental infrastructure of the exchanges or the service providers themselves. And these things are important because they do get into the realm also of compliance, because there's a lot of precision timestamping and things like that that go along with this data as well.
And those financial applications are really extreme. So they're not just a corner case. Like sometimes you deal with technologies that are just for some minuscule use case. In this case, packet capture at that sort of rate and the flexibility that you're talking about there, like this ability to examine, as you say, a counter inside of every packet and detect if a packet is missing or a piece of application data is missing, is actually a demonstration of just how far you go, I think.
That's right. And I forgot to mention one more unique property of these data flows. So there are a lot of different data flows that use sequence numbers. You know, it could be streaming video from Netflix or things like that. What's unique about market data feeds is that they're event driven by things that happen in the real world. So what happens is that if there's particular news that comes out, obviously election news or business news or things like that, then the amount of market data tends to spike because there's a lot of related events that go along with that. So if you have a solution that can't keep up with the data rates as they increase, then what's going to happen is that there might be a tendency to report gaps in that data when there aren't really gaps in that data. They're actually just gaps in the monitoring solution. So basically what I'm saying is that at the time where the information matters most, you can't depend on it. And that's what we address by doing these operations in hardware.
See, for me, it comes back to the most common use case that I personally have existed with is how do I make changes in a very complex security infrastructure and then detect if the packets are making it through or whether the firewall, like especially with application firewalls these days, are they dropping packets for no reason at all or because they're misconfigured or because some rule has been triggered? And I've had problems in the past where the infrastructure, the taps that I've been using or the packet capture mechanisms I've been using often inside the firewalls or inside the switches just haven't been up to the task. They don't have the capabilities to capture those packets. So my favorite use case for this technology is right there, an external device in the security infrastructure that helps you debug complex problems inside of the security infrastructure. And it's this lossless capability using network taps is in top of mind for me. What you're saying there is demonstrating that as well.
Well, we want to thank CPACKET for coming on the show today. And Jim, if you would, how can folks follow up with CPACKET? How can they follow you guys and find out more information?
Sure, Ethan. We are on the web at cpacket.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CPACKET Network. Mine personally is Jim Berkman. So event-wise, we're going to be at a bunch of different events this fall. Sharkfest, we're going to be one of the sponsors there. The Stack conferences for financial exchanges in New York, Chicago, and London. We're going to be at ONUG, going to be at the Strategic IT Security Conference in Europe. And then next year we'll be at Mobile World Congress and Cisco Live and RSA. So there's lots of opportunities to meet up with CPACKET.
And if you're at any of those events, now that you see CC Packet there as you're walking the conference hall, you should stop in and say hi and tell them that you heard about them on Packet Pushers and then ask them all the hard questions about what you want to do with them in your environment. And we thank CC Packet for sponsoring the show today. And thanks to you for listening to Packet Pushers today. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts, along with our community blog that is real network engineers writing about what they do at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can also find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, rate us on iTunes. And then last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.